Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Pan. This radio program is for Sunday, November the 15th, 2015. I'm up at Mount Madonna. Ooh, we're working on stuff. You should come to a Mount Madonna sometime if you're of the inclination to do anything really meaningful with your life beyond the common mediocrity that I see in the status quo of pedestrian mentalities. Most people don't do very much with their life at all. And these retreats are here, at least to expose you to something other than maybe what you've been exposed to in the past. And I offer them with great love. This radio program, this satsang, is here because of very loving people, a lot of them up at the retreat, who have offered their donations to make this possible, their tax-deductible gifts. And I hope that some of you will be generous and kind and help us sustain this radio program through your donations. Become a sponsor. It's a really easy thing to do. You get the message of the month each and every month. And next year, when I make the new programs on the Beatitudes, which is an interesting story, you will receive the, I think there are 5 discs. You'll be able to download them from the website at aspire.org and enjoy. And hopefully you'll find something there that will really help you. These are going to be very profound TV programs, some of the very best that I've ever offered. We've won 6 Emmys, 8 Telly Awards for our TV programs. And I think you will find that our offerings are not in vain. They offer insight and compassion and things that most people in this world do not talk about. Your donations go to support humankind. And they help me go to hospice and hospital, which I do regularly. You have no idea how deeply, deeply, deeply helpful your donations are. Be a sponsor. Come and help us. I have potpourri questions. They're really wonderful. These are questions I get from time to time from people who watch and listen to the TV programs here on the website and also listen to these radio programs. And I thought it would be very, very much fun to talk about them. And you kind of get a feel for some of the things that people ask me. First one comes from Marion. And she just says she listens to me from the Midwest. Wow. What are you talking about? She says. Period. I love how direct you are, Miriam. I really, really love it. Actually, to be honest with you, what I am talking about, I shouldn't be talking about. And I only do it to try to serve you in my clumsy and awkward way, to come to a place that might help you. I am just giving you suggestions. I'm just giving you insights to things that I've experienced and sharing with you the questions from people from all over the country. It is not to be taken literally. And please understand, this is why I ask for your forgiveness at the end of everything I do, because much of what I am talking about here should not be said. Real truth can't be taught, it must be caught. But being human beings as we are, I seek to try to offer to you that which is unspoken. And it's a very awkward situation for me, for the most part, because my words, my gestures do not really show you or express to you the depth of what I'm talking about. I can only point my finger at what I'm talking about. I can't make you understand. I can't change what it is I'm teaching to help you, because the teachings that are here, that are prevalent, that come through me, that have nothing to do with Gregory at all. Gregory would love to make it more simple for you. He'd love to make it easier. He would love to have it be logical and reasonable to your mind. And that's what he would like. And he thinks that if it were that, that more people might be served. But to be honest with you, I am serving a very small part of the populace of this world, of this country. You go to church, you listen to the Deepaks and the Tolies and all of that. That seems to be a very big thing. Ministers and teachers are trying to get on that bandwagon. They know the jargon, they know the logic, and they know the teachings per se as a philosophy. But they have no direct experience. Direct experience is not something you can teach a person. I have had those direct experiences, and I can't explain them because what I teach is inexplicable. It just can't be explained. It's unconscionable inexplicability that I am dealing with here. And boy, did I say that? I can't even believe I went there, but that's what it is. And when someone such as myself is teaching this kind of thing, it's very, 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 very important that you understand it. It has nothing to do with logic and reasoning, and that's not what I'm into. Not logic, not reasoning. I am trying to help you understand nothing. I can't help you understand. That's the frustrating part. I have to rely upon what is going on within you. I have to rely upon your sense of faith. Now, let me explain faith to you. Faith is not to believe me blindly. Faith is not to listen to me and go, oh, because Greg said that and he's had the direct experience, I should believe him. Not at all. No. I wouldn't want that for you or anyone else. Faith is what you deeply know that you cannot think. Faith is what you deeply know beyond your intellect, beyond your thoughts, beyond rationale, beyond logic and reasoning. Faith is what is happening within you that can't be translated into thought. It has to be caught. Now, I sat with a living master for quite a few years, and I'm telling you without a shadow of a doubt, without any doubt, I don't even think about it because I can't think about it. What I am offering to you is the same that was offered to me in a different kind of way, and it confused the heck out of me, just like it's probably confusing you, Miriam. You don't know what I'm doing. You don't know what I'm talking about because what I'm talking about doesn't relate to emotionality and the emotions that appease you and create desire, ambition, pride, and vanity within you. It's true with me too. There is no difference. The only difference is I've had a taste of the other shore. I've had a taste of that which is beyond my thinking. So what I try to do desperately, as you can probably tell on these radio programs more than my TV, that I am trying to share with you what has most been so precious to my loving heart, the authentic heart, not my genetic heart, but my authentic heart. You have an authentic heart too. And I am trying to bring the exalted into this moment with you where we can sit in the posture of a loving kindness, of a mutual loving kindness that exceeds emotionality, exceeds thought, exceeds belief. You know things deep inside, Miriam, that you cannot explain. Things you know that are intrinsic to your own heart, your own soul, your own being, as it were. And the difficulty is that in knowing these things and feeling them deep within you, you can't put a thought to them. That's what I'm talking about. I sound like an idiot to those who have had no direct experience, who have had no interest in direct experience, for those who just simply are looking to grasp philosophy. I watched a fellow colleague of mine on the computer, watching him bumble and stumble his way through a Sunday morning, discourse or sermon, whatever he called it. And it was really interesting to watch him try to dig up everything he could remember that he had read. He has no direct experience. And what he doesn't know is that he's leading his audience into oblivion. But then again, they want that. And that's what most people desire. Lead me to that place where we're all comfortable and cozy. Oblivion, emotional oblivion. And he catches himself while he's talking saying, did I say that? Or do you understand that? Or did that make sense to you? All during his talk. And I'm sitting there watching this going, oh my God. This is exactly what we do, all of us, from time to time. It's really interesting because in the very place that he is talking from physically, I stood there some 40 years ago teaching Jonathan Livingston Seagull. Quite a difference between Jonathan and what he's teaching. He's a totallyite. So he's not even teaching what he supposedly is supposed to be teaching according to doctrine and whatever. So you see, it's kind of a useless proposition here. You ask me, what are you talking about? Miriam, I am talking about nothing. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's interesting. We fill up the ethers with words and thoughts. We have enough words and thoughts in this world. Seems to me we need some wordlessness. Next one comes from Alan in Canoga Park. I think that's in LA, Canoga Park. I hear you, but you do not make any sense to me. Why? Alan. Alan, I am not here to make sense to you. Hate makes sense to you. Fear makes sense to you. Human love would make sense to you. But what I am talking about has nothing to do with hate and fear and human love. And of course it is difficult to understand me. I'm inexplicable. And I understand that I am. This reduces my audience down to the nubs because everyone now is so literal. You remind me of two ants. This is an old, old story that I heard many times in India. There were two ants. One ant lived on a sugar hill and the other ant lived in the salt hill. One day they met and the salt ant said, you know, I'm getting tired of the salt. It is bitter. And the sugar ant looked at him and said, well, why don't you come over to my hill and maybe take a little taste of what I live on, because I'm telling you, the hill that I live on is very sweet. Well, the salt ant being what the salt ant is, he was a bit dubious about this and doubtful. He was very cynical about it, but he decided, okay, tomorrow I'll be there. So before the salt ant took the trip over to the sugar hill to be with the sugar ant, he put a few morsels of salt in his mouth just in case. He didn't want to go without eating. So he goes over to the sugar hill and the sugar ant meets him and was happy to see him. And he said, take a taste. And he put a few morsels of sugar in his mouth. And he said to him, well, I don't see much difference between your sugar hill and my salt hill. And the salt ant was kind of being, shall we say, prideful about it all. But the sugar ant looked at him and said, well, maybe if you were to empty your mouth, maybe if you were not to bring with you so much of the salt that you have hidden in your mouth, you might find that the totality of this experience of sugar would be a lot different than where you came from. This is why you don't understand me. This is why many people don't understand me. They put a little salt in their mouth, a little of their own philosophy, their own religion, their own beliefs. Can't be helped. This is what we are. Genetically, this is what we do. We live in the genetics of our mother, our father, our ancestors, and they all had their beliefs, and we are carrying them in our body. We carry them in at the cellular level of us. So when you're sitting there listening to this program, this satsang, you're really not hearing it all. You're just hearing what you can hear based on the salt you have hidden in your mouth, in your thoughts. I am offering you sugar, but you listen to it from kind of a nonplus attitude. You're weighing what I am saying against what you believe in, what you've been taught, your genetic heart, not your authentic heart, your genetic heart. So I sound like a raving idiot. But if you listen to Jesus and Buddha and Lhasa, you understand they too sound like idiots. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Really? You listen to that from the little bit of salt in your mouth, the attitude that poor is bad. Blessed are the poor. I don't want to be poor. People don't want to be poor. Do you want to be poor? Do you want to be poor in spirit? People interpret that as without pride. And you got to have a sense of pride and dignity about yourself. Saving face is everything in this world. That is what I mean. If you listen to the teachings of the Buddha, of Jesus, they're very humbling. The same with Lhasa is beautiful, precious Tao. You have to be of the makeup that you have had enough, Alan. If you haven't had enough of yourself, enough of your mischief, enough of your nuttiness, enough of your insanity, if you haven't had enough of your own thoughts and how you and I live in our emotionality that makes us nutty and crazy, then you're not ready for this work. You're not ready to really expand. You can live in philosophy. You can live in some sort of religion, and that'll do it for you, because you don't want anything to get in the way of your spiritual mischief, as it were. People love to talk, but they don't want anything in the way of their mischief. They have things they like to do, little creature comfort habits of emotionality that they love to get involved in. So they listen to me and they fill their mouth up with as much salt as they can, and then they come over and pretend as though they took a little bite out of the salt. I mean, out of the sugar hill that I live on. They don't want to deal with that. Hate is a very powerful quality. Hate is the salt hill. Fear is the salt hill. And we love fear, the whole idea of hate and fear. It makes us safe. It makes us feel right. It makes us feel righteousness. And until I am done with that, until I can see the error of my way in that, I have nothing. That's why you hear me, but I don't make any sense to you, because sense to you is how you put together logically fear, anger, and hatred. It's how you live in fear, anger, and hatred. Everyone does, all human beings, including me. Until you've had the taste of the direct sugar hill inside you, you will be prone to living in hate and fear. I have found for myself that those are useless qualities. And while they live in Gregory as a potential, I don't act upon them. And I don't pride myself in them. I don't seek revenge. I don't seek to be right. And I don't seek to tell you how you should live your life. You will have to figure this all out for yourself, whether or not you are willing to go beyond the beyond and what you believe in. Something for you to think about, dear one. Please forgive me. Namaste. It's a great question. Last one comes from Suzanne. I am drowning in words. I am drowning in ideas and philosophies. You pull me out of these things when I watch you on TV, but then I go right back into the water of my philosophy and my hatreds. Why do I do this, Suzanne? Suzanne, it is all due to being attracted to emotionality. It is all being attracted to hate and fear. You come to conclusions about yourself based in hate and fear. You have concluded that hate and fear are more important than mindfulness, than consciousness, than compassion and love. Now, I am not here to talk you out of that because no one can. That would be foolish of me to think I could ever do anything like that. So I don't think in those terms. I am grateful that I've had the honor. I've never met Suzanne, but I am grateful that I've had the honor via this website to be able to help you with pulling you out of that. Now you must decide, can I live without the genetic heart that I live in, which has to do with my ancestry and has to do with the collective unconscious, immersing myself in it and living from the idea of right and wrong, good and bad? Am I done with that? Can I be done with that? When you start looking at the meaning of your life, when you start seeing the substance of your living, when you start realizing deep inside that just getting along in life or going along in life is never going to be enough to live your life, that is when something unique is going to happen. People generally kind of gravitate towards the worst part of themselves. And they like to hear a message that speaks to them of their genetic heart, which is love, hate, right, wrong, good, bad, up, down, all of that kind of stuff. And when a person lives from that dimension, they live from such a human part of themselves that they destroy any equanimity that they might have to live in compassion and love. I cannot talk you out of this. I can only offer to you, as I do, the alternative. You're going to have to detach from your emotionality. You're going to have to see the futility of your emotions and what they are doing to you. I can't get you to see that. I can only present to you what you are doing. I can't make you see it. But should the time come when you've had enough of yourself, as Lao Tzu said in the Tao, when you are sick of your own sickness, that is when something can happen. For many years, I stood before the public trying to help them. You really can't help people very much. That's why I've decided to do what I do, which is to focus on those who want to mature and grow. It's much more meaningful to me. You speak to the public, you have to, so to speak, cajole them in their emotionality. You have to say things that don't offend them, but in not saying those things that does not offend them, you miss the teaching and you don't help them at all. And that's what they want. They want to be entertained. They want to be enthralled in entertainment, and that's basically all it's about. They live in the familiarity of their own self-hatred. I'm out of here. Thank you for your beautiful question, Suzanne, and I hope it helped. Please forgive me. I'm out of here. Have a wonderful weekend. I hope this satsang helped you. And if it did, why don't you become a sponsor? Help us. Help us to keep this kind of message on the air. It's very rare. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.